From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday when Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren announced her proposed 2021-2022 budget. The plan would reduce funding for the Rochester Police Department and increase funding for the Office of Crisis Intervention Services. Also, it would allocate $5 million for the Police Accountability Board. That last figure matches the request made by the PAB in April, and if approved, it would fully fund the PAB for now. The PAB's executive director, Connor Dwyer Reynolds, and the chair, Shawnee Wilson, applauded the move. They cite that the city would be investing $1 in accountability for every $20 the city currently spends on policing. Critics, including some candidates for Rochester City Council, have questioned the $5 million figure. What exactly would it fund, they ask? What would more than 50 staff members be tasked with doing? Well, PAB members say the funding will help them pursue their mission aggressively. And this hour, we explore how that would pan out if the funding is improved. The PAB believes this could be the national model for this. City Council is expected to vote on the proposed budget on June 15th. Our guests today are from the PAB, and they'll answer our questions and yours. And I'd like to welcome them now. Connor Dwyer Reynolds is the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Connor, welcome back to the program.
Wonderful to be here, Evan.
Shawnee Wilson is the chair of the PAB. Shawnee, welcome back to you.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Rabbi Dror Shtetl is a member of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Rabbi, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
I want to spend most of the hour just digging through the numbers, and it's going to be a little granular, but this will be very important and instructive to be as detailed as we can. I will start just by asking all three of our guests if you were surprised that Mayor Warren's budget said, yes, let's green light this, well, let's fund it in full. Connor, were you surprised?
You know, Evan, I'm actually not surprised. You know, we spent 6 months coming up with this budget proposal. You know, we talked to experts across the country, people who've led other civilian review boards, and we said, look, what are your failures? What are your successes? What did you need to do your jobs? And, you know, they looked at our work and they said, you have so much work to do. You can be the national model. You can serve your community well. Here's what you need. And we translated all that into an 85-page budget proposal that crunches the numbers, deals with the data, deals with the facts. And, you know, I think, you know, we sent that to the city. They had, you know, a month to look it over. And I think that, you know, they were persuaded by what they saw and they got into the details. And that's why I'm excited for us to be here to talk today, Evan, because I think once the public hears the details, too, I think they'll realize that this is the right move going forward.
Shawnee Wilson, any surprise?
I actually thought that it was going to be a little bit longer before we heard about the budget, actually. So probably like right around the time they were going to vote on it. So I was surprised just about the timing. I was pleasantly surprised. So I am encouraged and hopeful that, you know, we will have a clear path to be moving forward with.
Rabbi Settle, what did you think?
I was very surprised and delighted. And I definitely hope that all our hard work paid off and the reason, you know, that proposal was made because they were persuaded by our arguments.
Listeners, if you want to check out what this money would be spent on, I want to point something out as we have this conversation. You know, we've been talking to candidates for Rochester City Council, asking if they're elected, would they support this kind of budget? Would they support it into the future? Do they think it's the right sort of move to build an infrastructure of this way for the PAB? And some of the hesitation we've heard from some of the candidates, not all, because a number of candidates have said, yes, green light it, fund it in full. Others have said, you know, I'm not really sure what they're going to spend the money on. The answers are out there in very specific details. Mm-hmm. And if you hear stacks of paper this hour, I didn't mean to knock down this tree, but it's an 85-page document, and there is a tremendous amount of specifics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, down to every job, it is there, and it's online, and it's easy to find. So I would encourage listeners to do that. It's easily digestible. I mean, it's not all that dense. It's really well laid out. And that's what we're going to be doing this hour. So, Shawnee Wilson, I heard you sort of nodding along with that. Is it important to you that the public understand that the $5 million is not sort of drawn out of thin air?
Absolutely. I mean, folks, this has to be an agency that is highly detailed, highly specific. And, you know, remember, we want to make sure that we are giving the city the justice that they deserve, and then also being fair to officers, right, when they go through this process. And so we have to make it as detailed, carefully detailed as possible.
Okay. And I guess let's start with the overall number, because when you look at the presentation in this document, one of the arguments is if we spend $5 million to create this PAB, to create these positions as outlined in the document, then we can get investigations done, we can return results, we can drive change, and we can do it in a way that isn't inordinately slow, burdensome on the public. But it's close. I mean, $5 million is close to the red, where you look and go, boy, we're underfunded. Whereas $5 million to $7.5 million, you can do more. $10 million, and you can, you can do a lot more in terms of speed and effectiveness here. So, number one, why didn't you ask for $10 million? And number two, you know, how did you end up with five if it's certainly not an arbitrary number? And I'll start with Connor Dwyer Reynolds.
You know, I think it's important that we be humble in this process. Look, we're building a brand new agency, and because, you know, we have some really remarkable powers, it's not like there's a perfect model out there. And so part of our budget proposal is saying, yeah, there is some uncertainty about how much exact work we're going to have in terms of complaints, et cetera. Given the best evidence we have, $5 million seems to be what we need to get the job done. And folks have to remember, the city charter says that our budget proposal has to allow us to investigate cases, you know, in, you know, 90 days, that's 3 months. That's a very pretty progressive time frame. You know, last year, the average civilian complaint was investigated in 9 months, in about eight, 9 months in the city of Rochester, you know. So the point being is that we may need more funds. We may need a little bit less funds in the few years to come. $5 million seems like where we think that's the odds of us having, you know, more than not a chance of success. And so that's where the $5 million came from, in addition to crunching all the numbers in terms of how many complaints we're going to have, how long is it going to take to investigate these cases, how many staff you need, those kind of things.
Okay. And Chair Shani Wilson, we'll start by talking about the Bureau of Officer Accountability that would employ 31 people and account for $2.27 million. So when you look at, for example, 24 jobs in this budget of the PAB for people to investigate allegations rigorously in the investigations division here. That number 24, why was it not 20? Why was it not 30? And are you comfortable with that number?
Sure, I'm comfortable with 24. You remember, so just like Connor said, we are really starting from the ground, and we're going to work our way up. You know, we were fortunate to be able to talk to multiple PABs across the country about their models and what they see to that works for them. And so, you know, we can start at 24, and I believe that we can work our way up. Remember, too, you know, we are trying to do our best to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the public, because we don't know when the doors open, when we're ready to go, what exactly is going to come through the door as far as like number of complaints. We think that there will be a lot of complaints that come through the door. And so we have to start with, I wouldn't start with 20. I wouldn't start with 19. I think 24 is a good number to start with.
Okay. On the subject of investigations, I want to start there and I want to lay out not only where the money goes and what the jobs are and what they're going to pay for, but sort of what the mission is here. And, oh man, if I can find it. I have too many notes, everybody. Today is the day where I have too many. There was a section. There was a section. Here it is. There was a section there in which you cite the city charter. So, Connor, you cite the city charter as further defining what steps the PAB must take to achieve its goals. And, quote, to hold individual officers accountable, the city charter requires the PAB to accept a wide array of complaints, investigate allegations of misconduct rigorously, and adjudicate allegations fairly. Starting right there with the word adjudicating, listeners might say, wait a second, I thought we're still waiting in court for you to have disciplinary power. What are you actually adjudicating here? What do you mean by that?
So let me just step back and talk a little bit about the current process.
Yep.
You know, the Civilian Review Board. Their job, they aren't investigating complaints. What they do is they take complaints from the public, refer those over to the police. The police conduct their investigation, throw the facts back to the Civilian Review Board. And the Civilian Review Board just kind of reviews the facts and says, do we agree or disagree with the department's decision to discipline someone? That's it. PAB is a completely different process. It's far more rigorous when it comes to investigations. We have to directly accept complaints and then do the investigation. You know, think about everything you see on Law & Order, from, you know, looking, collecting facts, interviewing witnesses, writing up reports, all of that we have to do independently from the police department. It's not just investigating the case. It's bringing the facts to the board, and the board decides, is there enough facts here to kind of charge an officer with wrongdoing? Once that happens, you have to have what's called an evidentiary hearing. Kind of looks like, again, what you see on Law & Order. There's witnesses, there's lawyers, there's evidence. That all has to go into a process where the board comes up with something that looks like kind of like a judicial opinion, laying out the facts and their opinion about whether or not misconduct happened. You know, this is a complex process. It's there to create transparency and truth for the community. This is a rigorous and fair process to ensure that officers get a fair shake. And yeah, adjudicate's the word here because it kind of looks like a judicial hearing. And so you also have to have an appeals process inside the PAB for all this. So I want to emphasize how complicated this process is, how resource intensive, and doing it right in justice to both officers and the community needs things like 24 people to be able to do the proper investigations. Think about a district attorney's office. That's what we look like.
Okay, but when it comes to adjudicating, it sounds to me, and tell me if I'm wrong here, like at the end of all this process, you're able to make recommendations, but you are still not able to discipline yet and might not get that power. Is that correct?
That's right. You know, the current court ruling in that lawsuit with the Locust Club, at the end of that process, that opinion that the board's writing, it's just a recommendation for discipline. But, you know, if you get disciplinary powers back, that recommendation would change into an order. I just want to emphasize, Evan, you know, even without disciplinary power, these kind of investigations can change police behavior because they bring transparency to things that have never been open before. Think about that shooting on Glasser Street. We're still waiting for the facts on that. That's the kind of thing PAB can clear up.
PAB would definitely be investigating something like the Glasser Street shooting and a lot more. And, you know, it's interesting to your point, Connor. I can imagine a scenario in which you don't have disciplinary power, but you go through a lengthy investigation, an adjudication process. Would you then publicly publish your recommendations? Could you say the PAB, after investigating XYZ event, makes a recommendation for the following? Here it is. It is up to RPD and the city to follow through, but we want the public to know where we are on this, even if we don't currently have the disciplinary power.
You know, Evan, the answer is yes on that. You know, the PAB has to have a transparent process, right? The problem with the current process is it's just hidden behind closed doors. We have to make, you know, while obviously balancing needs for privacy, particularly regarding, you know, victims of misconduct, we have to make sure the public is being fully informed of what's going on. And I want to say that, you know, the recommendations coming out of any investigation aren't just, you know, this officer broke the rules or not. Because in so many cases, you know, it's the rules that need to change. And what we at PAB are so focused on is systemic change. And so what I think you'll be seeing from some of these investigations isn't just discussions about did you break the rules or not, but what are the rules? Are they just? Are they fair in the first place?
Talking to members and the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board, which had requested $5 million to hire more than 50 people and to really launch its work in earnest. Mayor Warren last Friday said that's what should happen, $5 million in the budget. City Council will decide on June 15th, and members of City Council have already been speaking publicly in different ways about you know, their level of comfort and their understanding of what the money is going to pay for. So think about it. Listeners, if you think about it in three ways here, break it down in three ways. There's the Bureau of Officer Accountability, which is the investigations and the adjudication that we've been talking about, the fielding of complaints. They want to hire 31 total people. 24 of them, as we mentioned, would be investigating. 4 would be accepting and managing the complaints. And then 3 would be adjudicating the allegations. So that's the 31 jobs there. There's a Bureau of Systemic Change, which we'll talk about later in the hour. 12 positions. 6 to oversee RPD and make its work transparent. 3 to craft policies reshaping RPD's work. 3 creating rules to govern the PAD and officer behavior. And then there is a Bureau of Administration, 13 jobs there, including an executive director, 5 jobs in the Education and Engagement Division, 6 in the Operations Division, 1 in Legal. More than 50 total, just over $5 million. And when it comes to the work of investigations, the chair, Shawnee Wilson, put out a statement last week saying, you know, when we saw that Glasser Street shooting, this underscores the importance of having a PAB. This is what we'd be investigating. But Chair Wilson, let me also ask you about the kind of complaints you'd get. Obviously, you'd be working on Glasser Street. But when there is, when the public knows there's a resource like PAB, is there likely to be a flood of complaints that maybe don't end up in the news every day, but are you concerned or at least expecting, anticipating that now that your work would start, whenever it is, people who might not have said anything in the past are going to complain about some kind of an interaction from events that seem perhaps more mundane to events that are even up to being deadly? Do you think there will be more complaints?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, across the board, there'll be more complaints. You know, I think because the current system isn't, you know, the current system that the community does not appear to have a lot of faith in, that, you know, remember, you know, even from the mundane to the extremely serious, deadly, you know, I think that we're, you know, when we talk about what we can do now, which is policy, practices, and procedures, right? If I get a complaint about an officer behavior, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, I get the same complaint from the same officer, right? And it's the same type of complaint, right? That helps me to draw a line and to keep an eye and say, okay, well, we're seeing the same type of behavior from the same type of officer and the same type of situation with the same type of person. You know, how are we going to address that behavior? You know, is it going to be something that the, you know, that RPD should be notified about and say, look, you know, there are some, you know, behavioral complaints that you really need to address. And, you know, that's what we saw in the 58 documentation. If you saw the documents that came forth about officer misconduct, that there were a lot of officers that had the same type of complaints over a period of years that hadn't been addressed very well, I believe. So, you know, and also, we talk about policy as well. You know, if we have, like, I have people coming to me in the community now looking for help, looking for answers, that we're talking about, you know, practices and the practices of policing that they really want answers for. And so there, I believe that we're going to see a lot of policy change because there are so many interactions with the public that aren't really going very well, honestly. I'm just going to be honest, that we can really work on policy and procedure to make sure that, you know, that these issues and complaints are being addressed, but actually, just like Connor said, that the rules are being changed and that they are being either tweaked or adjusted so that they actually are, so people actually are held accountable by them.
So looking at, for example, the investigators, I already have a question from a listener named Charles who says he's still waiting to see someone answer his question about how many of the employees that you're going to hire will have actual law enforcement experience. From Charles' perspective, he's talking generally, but I want to ask, number one, if that is a priority of these more than 50 positions, is it important to hire some people who have worked in law enforcement, and specifically in investigating these cases, do you want people who have worked in law enforcement? And I'll ask all three of you. Rabbi Settle, I'll start with you.
So, I'm going to hand this over to my colleagues just because I know that the legislation includes restrictions on that, and I want to be sure we give you the right answer.
Okay, fair enough. Let me start with Connor Dwyer Reynolds then.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the city, I'm just going to read the city charter. You know, this is section 18-6. You know, it's all people that we hire and their immediate family have to be free of conflict of interests, including but not limited to current or former employment with the RPD or any other local, state, or federal law enforcement agency. So that's that's written right into the charter, right? And so PAB doesn't have a choice about those things. What I can say, though, is that every single person in PAB has to be trained in how law enforcement does their job, right? Because I think if there's something every single PAB member and myself agree with, and I think this gets to the heart of Charles's question, is can you oversee policing without direct experience from officers who do the job? And the answer is no, you absolutely cannot. And so it's up to the PAB to make sure that we are getting those perspectives and experiences throughout our work and making sure that every single staff member knows what's going on. And that's what we've been trying to do, you know, having a number of hearings. You know, we just had one a couple weeks ago about Black officer perspectives for a couple hours, hearing from one of the guests, a common guest on I hope people have heard on Connections, you know, former RPD Sergeant Marv Stefferson, you know, directly hearing from officers. And we're always having those conversations with people. And so I just want to reassure people that even if we aren't going to have former police officers on our staff is going to absolutely be listening to and working closely with experts in policing.
When I look at the kind of roles that, for example, an evidentiary investigator who will be part of the teams that would be investigating these kind of cases, typical work activities include, I mean, I just want to describe it very specifically for listeners, recording observations of the crime scene with photographs and sketches, cataloging and preserving evidence for transfer to crime labs, performing chemical, biological, and microscopic lab tests and analyses on evidence taken from crime scenes, consulting with experts in specialized forensic science fields as needed, preparing and explaining detailed reports that explain findings and investigation methods. How confident are you, Connor, that you're going to have a nice pool of candidates for evidentiary investigator, for the investigating counsel, and for so many others? Are you going to have the pool of people who have the experience and the qualifications to do this?
You know, I don't want to deny the fact that it's going to be a real challenge to get this agency from zero to 100. But I am certain that we can overcome that challenge, in specifically regards to getting the staff we need, because this agency is like people from across the country who work for other PABs, other agencies. They've already reached out and said, you know, this is amazing. I remember, I think the former deputy chief of Chicago said, like, I want to come work for PAB. You know, because we have this great model. And here's the thing. We have fantastic people locally who are coming to do the work. You know, we're hoping to get the work done, you know, whether it's people who work in, you know, the public defender's office, who have worked in other parts of the city. I think we can get that done. And what I'll say, Evan, is we're going to be working with the city closely to, you know, tweak any laws or tweak any hiring requirements to make sure we can get the experienced professionals to get the job done, in part because police officers deserve to know that when they're accused of misconduct, the investigations are being done by professionals.
Okay. Shawnee Wilson, are you looking at these, you know, 24 investigating positions and thinking we can get this done in 3 months, 6 months? It's going to take us a while. We are being overly ambitious, or there's a pool of talent ready to do this?
So I agree with Connor. I think that there is a pool of talent. I think that people across the country have been watching us. I think that people locally have been watching us. I've also had people approach me, call me, and say, hey, can you tell me more about what's going on? You know, tell me more about these jobs. You know, so people are definitely interested in the position. I actually am really excited about the training that will be happening for these positions, and really excited about just what they're going to learn. A lot of experienced people are going to be coming alongside, if we have our way, the Police Accountability Board be able to hire the trainees and the consultants that we want to hire, to make sure that the folks that we do hire are that are trained, thoroughly trained in how to do this type of work. And really, I'm just excited about the end product of that. Do I believe that in 30, 60 a day or 90 days, like what's specified in the charter? I really do believe that if we're able to spend the $5 million the way that we want to, I really do believe that that's possible, honestly.
Rabbi Settle, are you comfortable that you're going to be able to hire who you need?
I am, given, again, as Chair Wilson said, that we are allowed to use the money in the way that we have proposed and budgeted, which currently, I should bring up the fact perhaps because people might not know it, is that currently the way the budget is set out, it just gives that money for services without detailing how things will be spent. So I think a really important conversation for the public to have and for us to have with City Council in the coming weeks is to get clarity very specifically about how that money will be spent.
Okay. And in this division, in the Bureau of Officer Accountability, we've been talking about the investigators, but there would be four jobs for accepting and managing complaints. And Shawnee Wilson, as chair of the Police Accountability Board, you know, you've acknowledged that once you really get up and running, there may be more complaints to come in from the public. Is it kind of a two-pronged question here? These four jobs that will accept and manage complaints, is it their job to sort of gatekeep and decide which complaints actually get investigated? And then what does the PAB think about, you know, what's a baseline for whether a case should be investigated or not, or whether a complaint is sort of obviously superfluous or really meriting closer look?
Sure. So the first question, do I think that the four people will be able to effectively manage complaints? Is that your question?
Well, I mean, I'm asking, is it their job to gatekeep those? It sounds like those four jobs, those people will have the work, and that's a big responsibility to decide which complaints go forward. Is that right?
Right. So what I would say is that there's obviously going to be training and management to be able to figure out what cases the actual board needs to hear. Right. And if two things, right, because remember, we are not just a disciplinary agency. We actually are a restorative justice agency. You know, is a specific complaint something that the board should hear as far as like, you know, something that like what type of justice are they looking for? Do they want an apology? Do they actually want some sort of retribution? Do they want to see something happen to the officer? You know, after we've explained the process to them and hopefully we can get them the type of justice that they're looking for, then, you know, I think that the board may or may not get involved. I think that there's just a lot of steps saying, you know, we're talking about a process that still has to iron itself out. And, you know, I do want to say, though, that, you know, justice looks different and that, you know, some people, you know, I've heard people say, what do you want me to do? Or what would you like me to do for your complaint? They say, well, I just want an apology. Or I'm saying, well, I want this to go to, you know, somebody else, or I want to see that they're disciplined. So that's what I would say. And then when we are going ahead and going through the actual algorithm of how these complaints should be processed, what the board should hear versus what the actual complaints division should hear, and then how that actually gets investigated, that's going to take time.
Okay, and then two more questions on this one, and then we'll take a break. We're going to talk about the Bureau of Systemic Change and where the money gets spent there and what the goals are with that kind of work. Connor Dwyer Reynolds, what's a time frame for an average case? And I take Shawnee Wilson's point that there's going to be some complaints that are, you know, I'd like an apology, or I'd like, you know, a chance to sort of make this situation better. I had an interaction with an officer, maybe not rising to the level of a multi-month investigation or whatever the case may be. But there are, of course, there's going to be the Glasser streets. There's, you know, God forbid another Daniel Prude kind of case. I mean, we all hope that there won't be there. But whatever the case is, I mean, there's going to be some that are more time intensive. What is too much time? What is the goal for getting this done in X amount of time?
The city charter says that our proposed budget has to allow us to investigate cases and resolve them in 90 days, resolve any case in 90 days. So, you know, the way that other PABs, and that's a very, you know, compared to the way other PABs do it, that's a pretty aggressive timeline. The way other PABs do it is by having major case units, right? And so the amount of resources you invest is kind of proportionate to the allegation, right? So having a major case team is something that we've kind of discussed. And Evan, I think the important thing here is the way you get these complaints investigated in that right time frame is having highly trained, highly qualified staff with very clear and detailed investigatory procedures and processes for screening complaints. Again, to echo Chair Wilson's point, that's why the PAB really wants to bring on experts from other PABs to help us build this stuff at the forefront so that when we open our doors for complaints, the public can know you're going to come in and get a fair, quick process.
Okay. If you have, let's say, a $2.5 million allocation, let's say you don't get the $5 million, you get half that. Can you meet that 90-day standard, Connor?
It would be, you can't ever say no, but it would be extremely challenging to do so for most complaints. You know, I'll say even under our current budget proposal, you know, we expect some complaints to go outside that 90-day time frame, especially the ones that are very intensive, right? You know, trying to imagine doing an officer-involved shooting in just 90 days. But the point is that, you know, with half, you know, $2.5 million, I would expect, you know, most cases to, you know, take maybe, you know, half a year or something, you know? So it really is kind of proportional to how much our budget is.
Okay. And then the last one on the subject of the investigators is, you know, when you think about 24 different jobs to investigate the allegations that the PAB will get, is that based on a study of annual average per capita incidence, Rochester vis-a-vis other cities of its size? Because I know, again, you said the number's not arbitrary, but you're comfortable that 24 is the right number, and it's not 20 and it's not 30. How did you get there?
We got there using, you know, if you go to, for example, you know, the folks at Chicago, in Chicago have been doing this for years. They'll tell you that probably the closest correlation, if you're coming to a city, you want to build a new thing, look at the number of arrests. Why do you look at the number of arrests? Because that's a kind of an indicator of how active a police department is, right? And there's a pretty close statistical relationship between the number of arrests and how many complaints you can expect to get, as opposed to, say, looking at the number of officers or prior complaints in previous, you know, civilian review board settings in a city. So that's kind of the number that we use to generate a lot of these complaint estimates. And then looking at the kind of staffing to complaint ratios in some of these other PABs, that's how we came up with our figures. Again, it's not a perfect estimate, but it's the best one using the evidence we have.
After our only break of the hour, we're going to talk about the Bureau of Systemic Change. And we're talking about 12 jobs and nearly $900,000. So just under 20% of where the budget would go would be aimed at doing the kind of work on policy, reshaping RPD's work, creating more transparency. We're talking to the team of the PAB. Connor Dwyer Reynolds is the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Shawnee Wilson is the chair. Rabbi Dror Settle is a member of the board. And they've been working on not only this budget, but letting the public know that they want it to be transparent and that they're hoping that the city of Rochester and council will get behind it when the vote comes in mid-June. So we're talking about the $5 million for the PAB and how it would be spent and more with them next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about how disease spreads and why the New York State Legislature has passed a new law requiring employers to address it in the buildings, in their physical settings, the ventilation systems. We know COVID spreads indoors, mostly in poorly ventilated spaces. And this new law puts pressure on employers to make real changes. Can they do it in time? Would it prevent the next pandemic? We'll talk about it next hour. All right, before we jump into the Bureau of Systemic Change that the Police Accountability Board would be creating as part of their $5 million budget, let me get two listener questions in. First of all, Michael says, I would rather hire 55 new police officers than add them to an agency that will not do anything to keep me safe. How will this board make Rochester a safer place? Where is the money coming from? Michael, will be coming from our tax dollars, the City of Rochester. They've got City of Rochester's. This would be something like 1% of the overall city budget. He says, I can see criminals loving this. I'd rather have an accountability board for how elected officials waste our tax dollars. So Michael says, hire 55 new police officers because what we're discussing will not make people fundamentally safer. Shawnee Wilson, will the work that you're proposing and spending the money this way make people safer?
Oh, I believe so, yes. You know, I think that there's two different conversations that are happening within the city of Rochester, but they definitely intersect with each other. You know, we're having a discussion about, you know, how are people kept safe from just daily life here? You know, we know that there's been an uptake in crime, right? But they're also talking about, you know, citizens that are fundamentally afraid of the police. And that they are really having trouble with their interactions with police, right? Some of them being killed by police, or you know, some of them have injuries that are, you know, that are will continue for the rest of their lives. And you know, I think that that's also something that we have to address. I don't agree that we need 50 more officers. I actually think that we need to reallocate resources from officers and put them into programs like the PIC team. Right, programs where people that need mental health care can get it, programs like ours, programs where, you know, me as a mental health or a medical professional wants to make sure that if I, you know, assign or, you know, write a prescription for food, which I can do, that I have a place where somebody can go get that. Mm-hmm. Right. So these are the things that it's like, it's never just about crime, folks. It never is. There's always an underlying deep, you know, dark hole as to what's going on here. And I think that that's really the thing that we need to be addressing, really.
Rabbi Settle, you want to add to that?
Yes, I do. So first of all, we already have twice as many police officers per capita in Rochester than literally any other city except one in the country. So clearly, the number of police officers is not correlating with public safety. The other thing is that I don't think people are aware, but less than 10% of what police officers do involves violent crime. The vast majority of an increase in policing ends up being basically over-policing of Black and brown communities for minor infractions. And I think that again, we have to understand what actually happens with policing in that way. And I think that it is a really important moment and great opportunity for our community to have a conversation about what makes us safe. What is public safety? What does that mean? How is that created? And to demand more of our police, in fact, in closing homicide cases and addressing violent crime, perhaps, and doing that part of the job, but to really ask whether the over-policing is anything that increases safety or not. And I feel that my experience on the board, you know, one of the real honors of serving on this board is hearing the experience of my Black and brown colleagues, and the fact that, you know, the adult men and women on our board talk about their fear of watching just a police car pull up behind them, you know, is something very important for those of us who aren't part of those communities to really understand the impact that policing can have when it's not done with a deeper vision of public safety.
Okay, and Connor Dwyer Reynolds, if you want to add to that, go ahead.
Well, only that, you know, I think that the mission, we're about to get into this with our Bureau of Systemic Change, the mission of the PAB is to keep everybody safer by having a better public safety system overall, right? You know, right now, you know, people just don't know, you know, costs and benefits of policing. What is the police's job? How do they do their job? How are we making sure that the policies and procedures that govern the police department work not only to keep the community safe, but to keep officers safe, right? And if we aren't willing to ask the hard questions, do the research, do the deep dive in the police department, we're actually doing police officers a disservice. So that's kind of the reason why we're focused on systemic change and keeping everyone safe. And so I guess I'd say to the caller, you know, trust but verify a little bit, and we're going to do the work. And I think that a fully funded PAB is actually going to keep everybody in our city safer.
Tim writes to say, Evan, could you ask the panel how one would apply for one of these investigator positions? What are the qualifications? When and where are people going to learn information about applying for these jobs, Connor Dwyer Reynolds?
You know, that's a really great question, and I want to have a clearer answer. This is one of those interesting things about being a new independent agency in the city, is figuring out how, you know, our legal powers to hire and supervise staff translate into a clear process of, you know, getting people recruited. You know, I think so we're going to be working very closely with the city over the next, you know, couple of weeks to make sure that we have a clear, open, and transparent process where people can, you know, there's campaigns around the city to make people understand that these jobs open, what the jobs can give to people, the work you can do, you know, application portal that works for everyone. And so I'd say keep your eyes peeled. You know, we will be making sure the public knows when they can apply for these positions.
What is the fastest, Connor, that you think you can... I mean, if you get $5 million green-lighted next month, what is the fastest that you think you can have hires happening?
You know, it really is contingent on this thing that Rabbi Settle brought up, which is, you know, right now the city budget proposal does not include, you know, it doesn't say, you know, the PAB can hire X, Y, and Z positions. Because if that were the case, we can move quite quickly with this. Right now, all the funds are just allocated into the services line. And so until we get clarity from the city about exactly how we're going to be able to, you know, hire staff, who the staff can be, et cetera, I can't really say how quickly. You know, on the other hand, if, you know, city council were just to say, you know, pass our budget proposal with all the approved lines and stuff, I think, you know, going into, you know, late summer and fall would be a time when we can start really bringing people on board. Because, Evan, the important thing is to have training, academy, all this stuff in place before you bring people on board, right? That's so important. And so it's all about sequencing.
All right. So late summer into the fall, if things go well, you've got people starting to do the actual work, possibly, it sounds like.
Yeah, or at least bring them on board, you know, yeah. Whenever, you know, opening for complaints day, that would be C day. I think we'd have to figure out specifically when that would be. But certainly in terms of bringing on especially policy folk who can really start getting to the big picture on stuff, I'd really hope we could start then.
We spent a lot of time talking about where the bulk of the hiring would be, which is in the Bureau of Officer Accountability, the complaints, the investigations, and adjudication, for good reason. But the Bureau of Systemic Change would allow for the hiring of 12 people Shawnee Wilson, what is the overall mission of this bureau and the PAB? Might be on mute, Shawnee.
Sorry, folks.
You got it.
Phone issue.
Yep.
Okay, so I believe the Bureau of Systemic Change is to, you know, just like the budget proposal says, that to ensure public accountability and transparency over the powers exercised by sworn officers of the Rochester Police Department. You know, so we're here to make sure that, you know, that that policies that actually exist, are actually being enforced or actually being like on the street is what's actually in policy, right? Because just like in medicine, how we have the art of medicine, I've been saying this all week, we have the art of policing, right? If I have a policy or procedure that I want to make sure that that's actually being, that's actually what's being practiced on the street. And yep, I know that when I inject somebody in their arm and I put a vaccine in their arm, for instance, like I've, you know, with the COVID vaccinations, the art of actually putting it in their arm is going to be different, right? Depending on how your hand moves, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's still supposed to go in their arm. It's still supposed to go in a specific place in their arm, right? So we want to make sure that that's actually being done properly. And I really believe that that will actually really start to hammer home on some of the issues that people are having across the city with how they're being treated, honestly.
Okay. Rabbi Settle, how do you see maybe some of the benefits in the mission of this Bureau of Systemic Change?
Well, I think what's really important to understand is that if we were a board that only heard complaints, and even if we were a board that disciplined complaints, that is addressing harm that's already present. What the Bureau of Systemic Change allows us to do is stop that harm in the first place, right? Is to look at how the practices, the policies, the procedures, et cetera, to look at the evidence and see what can be done so that misconduct doesn't happen at all. Perhaps that probably is a little optimistic to think it will not happen at all, but the idea that you know, we look at the roots of the problem, not just sort of the flower, if you will.
Okay. And Connor Dwyer Reynolds, do you want to add to that?
You know, here's my pitch, Evan. The Rochester Police Department, with benefits and everything, we spend $150 million on a public safety program. The mission of that department is to keep the public safe. We spent over $1 billion in the last 10 years on this. Here's a basic question. Has that department been effective? How has it kept people safe? How do we measure that department's, you know, success? Those questions just haven't been asked. They're rarely asked ever about police departments. Step back and think small C conservative, you know, local, you know, focused on good government. You should be so in favor of this. It is bringing transparency and a real systems approach to making sure that taxpayer dollars are spent right, right? I think that's anything that everyone can get behind. The problem is we've never had that with the Rochester Police Department, and getting it is going to require this kind of investment in people looking at the system, thinking about best practices, talking to the community, understanding how they want to be kept safe, translating that into visions for a new kind of public safety system.
So when we look at oversight, I'm looking at your budget. You've got six jobs in the oversight division whose work would be described as overseeing RPD and making its work transparent. Six different jobs. What do you envision one of those jobs doing, Connor?
So here's one. You know, we've already heard from the community about a lot of hot button issues here, right? Low level stops. You know, why is RPD arresting people for not having a bell on your bike, right? How do you think about solutions to that? You want to have an evidence-based approach, right? So you'd have to have someone going in, requesting all of the internal policy documents, because there's a ton that's not publicly available, right? Memos, et cetera. What's the actual policy with regards to why this is happening? What are the orders? How are officers being trained on this issue? You know, what are the data in terms of how many arrests are being made? Who's being arrested, all that. Interviewing officers, interviewing supervisors, going to other communities, gathering best practices, and then, you know, talking to officers, talking to the community. What do you think needs to be done? Bringing that all together into reports, public presentations to educate the community. I just said a lot of different things, and those are the things that these people are going to be tasked with.
Are they going to have the cooperation of RPD to get information that they need on this?
You know, I have faith they will, because the law says that the city has to. You know, one of the things that makes PAB is such a national model is the law bakes in a requirement that the city and the RPD essentially provide access to any source of information the board wants, whether that's, you know, internal RPD databases for body-worn camera footage, emails, policies, procedures, et cetera. So the law gives us the power to do it. And I'll say, you know, just like any other PAB in the country, the law department and the police department aren't always, in terms of, you know, looking for that transparency, always, you know, looking to follow the law right away. It's part of the reason why, you know, we got lawyers involved to make sure the city does follow the rules. I want to emphasize here, this is not individual officer decisions not to, you know, cooperate with the PAB. This is a system-level problem, and that's, you know, that's why we're bringing in system-level solutions to make sure that the law is followed and the PAB gets the information it requests.
Well, and information it requests, I mean, let's hope you get it. You know, Shawnee Wilson, I was really struck in talking to Bill Johnson, Dr. Mohammed Shafiq, and the leaders of the Raise Commission, who told me on this program that when the Raise Commission was doing its work and they wanted to know all about the training of how Rochester police officers are trained, who do they hire to train them? What are those persons' credentials? How much training do they get? What is the focus on? They couldn't really get it.
Yeah.
I mean, It was amazing to me. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the PAB can get that information?
I hold out hope, just like Connor said, that we will get cooperation of the RPD. I think that, you know, just like I think I really just want to ask a bigger question as to why is it that these different agencies are having so many problems getting the resources that they need from the Rochester Police Department, especially something that was, you know, done at the county level. Very, very interesting. But, you know, for us, I'm hoping that we can have their full cooperation. We will have our legal team get involved to make sure we get it. You know, I think that the law is clear, and I really hope that we can have full cooperation without any of that happening, though. I think that the community is demanding answers, and, you know, they're demanding answers from their local police department. So I'm really hoping that that will work out.
Okay, and I want to make sure we squeeze in just a little bit of talk about the policy division. Three jobs, those jobs designed to craft policies to reshape RPD's work. How do you determine, Shawnee, what policies are needed? I mean, I guess that's part of the job here, but overall, do you have kind of an idea in your mind of what this division is going to get done?
So yeah, you know, just like I was telling you about, you know, going over – So I guess I'll say this, like to start out saying first that our policy, that just because people have a complaint or anything like that doesn't mean that we can't investigate all of policy, right? You know, for instance, on the treatment of minors in police custody, I know that there is something that's there, but it doesn't talk about pepper spraying, right? So we would investigate just an overarching theme would be just investigating treatment of minors by Rochester Police Department, right? You know, so we will take those policy concerns that have been brought to our attention by recent cases and investigate those. But that we are not limited to just that. You know, we've had people reaching out to us in the community about, you know, their treatment while being arrested. You know, if you are pregnant, you know, and if you tell an officer that you're pregnant, how are you treated while you're in police custody? You know, do they automatically, like, what happens to you? You know, if you are, for instance, you know, like I see in my clinic, I've seen in my clinic once in the last 2 weeks, if you were in a car accident and they're suspecting that you're drunk, are they supposed to call the emergency medical services or are they supposed to make you do the field sobriety test? You know, so those are things that it's like, I want to make sure that, you know, people are being kept safe and making sure that we are actually examining policy. You know, number one, is there a policy response to what's actually happening, right? And if there is, then does it match up with the actual practice of policing? And then if it does not, then it needs to be changed, right? And then we can talk to folks and talk to those at RPD about that as well to get their input. But something has to happen where those two things match up so they keep the community safe. Then we can take a look at policy, big P, policy in general, to make sure that their policy actually is humane, mm-hmm. anti-racist, and transparent. Mm-hmm.
Lastly, Connor, when I look at these jobs, are most of the jobs pay between $64,000 and $85,000, some a little bit more. I know you want to sort of live your values and make sure people are paid fairly based on the work that they would provide. And I know that you kind of got into a tangle with the city a little recently about the importance of paying people commensurate with their value, not just past history. In our last minute here, can you promise taxpayers this is going to be a fair use of their money? You're going to pay people well, but you're going to pay them fairly. And you know, can you give me your thoughts on the importance of the city following through and paying people, you know, fairly?
You know, I think this is an issue where I think there's going to be a lot of progress, because we've heard from city leaders that they are all dedicated to pay equity. And so I think the TAB's own push for equitable pay is we're going to work on that. We're going to get somewhere with it. You know, we have to get through some old policies and procedures, caught up in HR and these kind of things. But, you know, I want to really say to people, this is a worthwhile investment. You know, again, we got to pay officers deserve to know, and the community deserves to know that the work is being done by professionals. We aren't paying these people, you know, six figures, crazy things. We're paying them living, decent wages. And because we want to hire a diverse staff, we have to be especially careful about making sure that these people are paid what they are valued instead of the way that they are seen oftentimes by the labor market. So, you know, this is a worthwhile investment because, again, this city has invested over $1 billion into RPD in the last 10 years. It's worth $5 million in the PAB to make sure that that investment is actually paying off.
Listeners, we'll post the 85-page document that if you really want to look line by line, job by job, all the numbers are there, how it breaks down, where it would go. The mayor has said she's greenlighting the funding, and now city council decides next month, and I'm sure we will get a lot more details as the weeks unfold here. Connor Dwyer Reynolds, Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Thanks for being with us, Connor.
Thanks, Evan.
Chair of the board, Shawnee Wilson. Thank you, Shawnee.
Thank you.
And one of the many members of the board joining us this hour was Rabbi Dror Settle, representing herself and her colleagues. And I really appreciate you and the work that you guys are doing. Thank you, Rabbi. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
All right. A lot more to come on that, and more connections coming up in just a moment.